Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Wisconsin courts made two decisions this week in very different cases that could affect the future of the state's open meeting and public record laws. One involved a Wisconsin Supreme Court decision regarding the legislature's handling of Governor Walker's plan to strip collective bargaining rights from government worker unions. The other involves an appeals court decision to consider if a newspaper has the right to information involving one of La Crosse County's most famous murder cases. In 1985, Brian Stanley believed he was following God's will when he shot and killed a priest, lay minister, and custodian at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Onalaska. Although he pled guilty, the court ruled that he was not responsible for the slayings due to mental illness. La Crosse County Judge Ramona Gonzalez ruled 2 years ago that Stanley was fit to be released from a mental health institute. While Gonzalez ordered Stanley's records sealed, the La Crosse Tribune believes the public has the right to access the material. I sat down and talked about these issues with attorney Joe Veenstra of Johns, Flaherty & Collins Law Firm and River Valley Newspaper Group executive editor Chris Hardy.
The Brian Stanley case obviously has a long history in this community, and we feel that the issue of the case boils down to, is the community entitled to know some of the conditional terms of his conditional release in terms of just a public safety awareness? We have a case here where we have a gentleman who was mentally ill at the time that he murdered three people. The status of his mental illness was well known. It was the bulk of his case. His treatment records when he was in Mendota were well known. In fact, they were publicized. We knew what kind of drugs he was taking. And at the time when the court rules that he was safe to return to the community, all of a sudden his treatment records become confidential. And at the time when he's in the public, we feel that there's a contradiction there and that it's in the public's interest that the public is privy to that information so that we know that the public is safe.
And you've mentioned that there are other counties within Wisconsin that have laws that differ from the ones here in La Crosse.
It's a question of applying the law equally. We went to Waukesha County where they had a case of an individual who pleaded not guilty by reason of mental defect, and we asked for a copy of the terms of his release back into the community, and we were given a copy of that with no questions asked. Why is it in La Crosse County that that's deemed a not a public record, and in other parts of the state it is a public record?
And Joe Veenstra, I want to get your opinion on this matter. You're not involved in the Brian Stanley case, and you're not representing the La Crosse Tribune. But what's your opinion in trying to release the release details?
Well, I think these type of cases are always involve conflicts of two different public policies. One is the press and the public's right to know facts that are things that are happening in their community, things that are happening in the court system, things that are happening in the criminal justice system versus rights that an individual may have to protect what may be confidential information regarding their medical or mental health treatment. Anytime there's a conflict between two public policies, that's when lawyers get involved and courts have to make decisions, and that's what is happening.
So does each county have different laws regarding releasing medical records, or is this just differences of opinions between judges?
There are not different laws. The difference may be that in one county, an individual who wants to protect the confidentiality of his mental health treatment records may have an attorney who is able to assert his rights, and in another county, the person may not have an attorney that's willing or able to do that and may not, in fact, object to the release. So the custodian of those records, without any objection, may just, in fact, release them.
So, Chris Hardy, the State Appellate Court will, in late July, will consider the Tribune's request to unseal the release details for Brian Stanley. Can you talk about the process leading up to this decision?
This goes back to 2007 when Brian Stanley appeared before Judge Gonzalez in La Crosse County Circuit Court when Gonzalez ordered that he be released into the community. And at that time, his attorney did make a request that the terms of his release be confidential. and Judge Gonzalez agreed with that request. Immediately after that hearing, we've made numerous requests and numerous petitions, and we've had multiple court hearings since 2007 in our pursuit of those records. Now, the case that's before the appeals court has now mushroomed into a number of different areas, but central to the core of the case, our request is still the same, is that we don't feel that that the law backed up the request of Stanley's attorney and the ruling of Judge Gonzalez that that the records that we seek should be confidential.
As far as maybe similar cases in the state, have you seen anything like this? Or is this setting a precedent?
There's lots of precedent cited in the appeals court briefing on both sides, and it's become quite in-depth. I think that the question that the appeals court has to wade through is which cases apply to this case and which don't. And I think that actually the fact that we have oral arguments before the appeals court is quite rare, in my understanding, in the legal world, is that normally the appeals court just rules on the cases itself and very seldom asks for oral arguments. Don't know what that means other than we've been told that's pretty rare.
Do you have any idea, Joe, what that means?
I would say that means that let me just say this. The Court of Appeals is an error-correcting court. It doesn't usually try to make as much law. It's sort of the trial court screwed up, here's the reversal, go for it, or they rubber stamp the trial court. So it is, if they're taking oral argument, that means there are some serious disagreements and arguments on both sides, and it's a very serious case. It wouldn't surprise me if this ended up in the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Chris, I'm wondering if you can talk about other cases that the La Crosse Tribune has pursued legally in regards to open records laws.
Over the course of our history, there have been numerous cases where we've pursued open records acts. Thankfully, most of them don't end up in the court. That's not where you want them to end up. And what you want with open records laws is that we can deal directly with the municipality or directly with the government agency that we feel is not properly following the open records laws. And most of the time, that's where it's conducted. And I will have to say that in many, many cases, in fact, almost all the cases, there was no deliberate intent upon any government body to not follow the open records laws. What happens is, particularly with some of the town governments, is you get a new cast of characters that are elected. They didn't run on, I'm going to adhere to the open records laws. They ran because they wanted to serve the public. And so a part of our continuing challenge is making sure that they're not going into closed session inappropriately, that they're properly posting meetings. And we do that not for the sake of the La Crosse Tribune or the media. We do it for the citizens because the open records laws apply to any citizen. And I think that's sometimes misunderstood where they think that people think that the media is just doing this because we're given some super special privilege of access, and we don't. These are laws for all citizens, and that's why we feel that we represent all citizens when we do those things.
Maybe the media does pursue these open records requests more often than usual citizens. Joe, do you see that as the case?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think lawyers use the open records law frequently to obtain information about individuals and businesses and in criminal defense cases quite often. So it's a tool for a lot of different people.
So is this in the best interest to release the release details of Brian Stanley?
Well, we obviously think it is. And the question is that, and I think what some of the people are not understanding is that we're asking for some specific details in the Brian Stanley case. It does not mean that we're going to publish all of those details. We're asking for the right to ask for them. And I think that's the important part of this. We know where Brian Stanley lives. La Crosse isn't a large community. That isn't the issue at this point. The issue is the access and future access that we think is really important.
Setting a precedent.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Newsmakers. My guests today are Chris Hardy. He is the executive editor of the River Valley Newspaper Group, which the La Crosse Tribune is part of this group, and Joe Veenstra. He's an attorney with Johns, Flaherty, and Collins. I want to talk next about collective bargaining in Wisconsin. On Tuesday, the Supreme Court ruled that a committee of lawmakers did not violate the open meetings law, which ended up passing the collective bargaining changes. The Supreme Court ruled that the lawmakers don't have to follow open meetings laws. Joe, I'm wondering if you can comment on the Supreme Court's decision. What's your reaction to this?
Well, I don't think anybody who keeps an eye on our Supreme Court is shocked by the way the case turned out or by who just ruled on one side or the other. It was a 4-3 decision. And I don't think the result is surprising. The fact that it was issued very quickly after oral argument, the oral argument was on June 6th, and the order was issued on June 14th, I think was a little surprising. And some would say serendipitous for the legislature in the sense that they were planning on meeting to, in fact, pass this part of the collective bargaining bill again, just to moot the whole judicial system. So it's very interesting that that is how it happened, and very unusual that they basically turned it into an original jurisdiction case and ruled so quickly. And it was in total, the amount of actual writing in the order is about 7 pages, you know, from hearings that took several days. So it's pretty unusual.
And Chris, can I get your reaction to the ruling?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I think that the speed in which it came out is not in character with normal Supreme Court rulings. I also question that we had some legislative leaders and members of Walker's cabinet that said we're expecting that we're going to get a quick ruling on this, and so obviously they had some insight. I think the biggest misnomer in this is that the Supreme Court actually never even ruled on the Open Meetings Act. They just said that the legislature can make its own rules. And I think that the issue essentially is that the Open Meetings Law, which is very clearly spelled out, obviously doesn't apply to the legislature. So the largest, the single most important governmental body in the state doesn't have to follow the laws that every other government agency has to follow.
And why is that? I mean, that just doesn't seem that if you're going to have an open meetings law, then it should apply to everyone. Joe, why does it not apply to the state legislature?
I think because there's a constitutional separation of powers problem when a court is analyzing the process used by the legislature to pass a bill. And the majority said basically the courts have no role in the passing of legislation. And because the open meetings law is not constitutional, that unless there's a constitutional violation at issue, we're not going to intermeddle in how the legislature passes bills. And that's what they decided to do. Whether that's good or bad for the long-term prospects for our state is to be decided later, I guess.
And in your opinion, Chris, has the legislature generally followed open meetings law?
Boy, that's a good question. Without being in the Capitol and following every proceeding, it's hard for me to say. I would think in spirit they certainly have. I mean, I think particularly today with Wisconsin Eye and with many, many people covering the Capitol that there isn't a lot of secret meetings being conducted. However, I think that the whole process of parties being able to meet in closed caucus wipes a big hole into the concept of open government when the party in power, and the minority party for that matter, if they can meet in closed caucus and debate all these things and then quickly call a two-hour meeting and ram through legislation, I don't think that meets the spirit of open meetings in Wisconsin.
There is some talk. Some Democratic lawmakers have come out saying that they would like to make changes to this rules regarding open meetings laws within the state legislature. So if something like that were to pass, I mean, would something like meeting behind closed doors in a caucus, would that even be legal anymore?
I doubt that the legislature will pass anything that would eliminate their ability to meet in caucus privately. I just think they have a deep interest in outside of the public being honest with one another about what they plan to do, and I just doubt that's going to happen. Now, could they amend the open meetings law to say that it definitely applies to the legislature and, you know, dictate certain rules that have to be complied with? Yeah, I could see that happening.
So if lawmakers do not have to follow the open meetings law, what good is it?
The law still applies. It actually even applies to state agencies and state commissions, which is and every other board and entity in Wisconsin. This doesn't rule, doesn't mean that the open records law doesn't apply. It still does apply. And I think that perhaps as a result of this, maybe there might even be more focus. the silver lining on this is maybe we'll talk even more about open record laws, why they're important in the state. And if we can start engaging more citizens in that debate, obviously there are a lot of issues in Madison that occupy people's time and attention. And I think this one will quickly get buried because it isn't first and foremost on people's minds. But if we start talking about open records and open access and things that ultimately are really important for democracy, maybe something positive will come out of this.
Do you see any changes in the future to prevent anything like this from happening again?
The way the court ruled, there would have to be actually to make the open meetings apply to the passing of legislation, there would have to be a constitutional underpinning to the open meetings law. So that would take more time than the usual passage of a bill and would be more difficult. But it wouldn't shock me if somebody tried to do it.
In Wisconsin, there are two statutes that regard access to freedom of information. There's the Open Meetings Law and then the Public Records Act. I'm wondering if you can briefly give us a rundown of what these laws mean.
Well, what the laws do is they mandate that certain government agencies, government in general, towns, villages, and cities, and county boards conduct their meetings in public, except with certain exceptions that apply. They also mandate that certain custodians of records, authorities that are called under the statute, I think, essentially have to disclose records that exist within government to people who request them. Any individual can request them. They have to be responded to relatively promptly. I'm not sure the exact details. And then let's say, a meeting is conducted in violation of the open meetings law, the meeting isn't posted correctly in advance, 24 hours, I think it is. Could be wrong about that. But any action that's taken at that meeting could be declared void. And essentially that's what happened in the large case that was just reversed.
And then as far as Public Records Act, when is it appropriate for an individual to request a document regarding, let's just say, collective bargaining? And when can a governmental body say, no, we won't give it to you, and it might cost this much money?
Yeah, there's been sort of little fights about how much it should cost. I think even up in Alaska, they have a similar law where then-Governor Palin was asked to release a bunch of emails. They initially said it was going to cost several hundreds of thousands of dollars, I think, to produce emails, which could be, I think, just dumped onto a flash drive. But in any case, normally the custodian of the records has to release the records. I mean, I don't think anybody can request them whenever they want. It's easiest if you do it in writing. Just write a note and hand it to the custodian of the records, and they should at minimum respond to it. There are some issues sometimes with, like, employees that they don't have to disclose certain personal information, and they have to give the employee an opportunity to object to it and things like that. But without getting into the minutiae, generally speaking, the public's entitled to documentation that the government has.
What cannot be in a document that's released?
Well, I don't think for, like, an employee isn't going to want their Social Security number and things that could be stolen by criminals and things like that to be disclosed. Medical information is governed by federal law, HIPAA. At the federal level, there's a lot of state secrets and defense stuff that isn't released. There are a lot of exceptions to these laws. But in general, for the regular day-to-day government, stuff is supposed to be released.
And if an individual wanted to attend a governmental meeting, and they were told they cannot be there because the body was going into closed session, when is it that they cannot be there, and when are they allowed to be there?
In my experience, closed session is used to talk about, most of the time, some sort of legal issue that the governmental body is going to discuss and how they should respond to either a possible lawsuit or a claim that's been filed with their insurance company, or some sort of employment-related event. Someone's going to get terminated, or there's going to be a decision about some sort of issue in employment, and those are specific exceptions to the open meetings law. And that, in my experience, that's when people aren't allowed in the meeting, and they are just told to leave, and they usually leave. I've never experienced someone not listening to the clerk when they say this is a closed session item. I'm pretty sure it has to be disclosed that it's going to be closed session ahead of time. And I think if somebody really thought it was something that wasn't a proper exception to the open meetings law, they could assert some claim that it shouldn't be.
And what about a private, if there was a private group meeting, an individual was told, we're going into closed session, is that legal because they're private?
I don't think a private group ever has to say they're in open closed session, doesn't have to post anything. There are some issues with quasi-governmental agencies like some local economic development corporations have been, I think, declared to be public entities that are subject to the open meetings law, and that was a surprise to a lot of people, and they now have to disclose. So if there's a fine line between sort of a governmental purpose, I might, if I was helping them process their meetings, tell them to post and disclose and allow people to attend.
And Chris, I see you have your Society of Professional Journalists pamphlet with you.
I do.
Do you want to talk about that and what that, how that has served you in your career?
Sure. I mean, I think that, that part of our responsibility is for all of our reporters to have a basic understanding of the Open Meetings Act and understand that. Just to emphasize a couple of points that Joe made, I think that, that every meeting is public. If it's a public body, it's a public meeting. And the agenda for that meeting has to be posted in advance, and you cannot change that agenda of the meeting without reposting it. And you can't go into closed session if you have not previously noticed that a closed session was on the agenda. One of the most common violations that we see would be going into closed session, and they'll list the statute. The law specifically states they have to say what the nature of it is that they are going to be discussing in closed session, not the specific, but the general topic of the closed session, so that people can understand that, yes, it does meet the criteria for going into closed session that, that Joe talked about. And they also then cannot, unless it's on the agenda, they can't go into closed session and chase everybody out and then reconvene and vote on something in secrecy. It has to be on the agenda that they will or will not come back into open session, because that's happened in the past too, where you go to closed session, everybody leaves, and then when they're meeting in private, then they adjourn to open session and there's no one around and they can take some action. And I think that, that our reporters need to be really keenly aware of making sure that our public officials are following those procedures representing the interests of the public.
How often does it happen that someone cites a specific reason, whether it be contract negotiations within closed session? How do you know that that's what they're actually talking about?
I believe that there was either a change in law or a proposal in the past year that requires governmental bodies to take minutes or to record the closed session so that there is a record of what it is that was discussed. But what's discussed in closed session can't be closed forever. There has to be a time period where that becomes where the balancing act is applied, and that becomes then the public's right to know of what was discussed in closed session. So there is even a way that we can make sure that that the governmental bodies are doing what it is that they're supposed to do. They also have to stick very, very closely to the topic at hand. They cannot give a legitimate reason to go into closed session and then talk about something else.
Chris Hardy is executive editor of the River Valley Newspaper Group, and La Crosse attorney Joe Veenstra works for Johns, Flaherty & Collins. They spoke about issues relating to Wisconsin's open meetings and records laws. Coming up in the next half hour, we'll talk about foster kids who turn 18 and age out of the system. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum.